Hey, Andy, it's John from Little Stranger. I'm going to try to make this quick because I don't know where Kevin is. I wanted to just float the idea to you about maybe just taking me out solo for the rest of this tour. I don't know, man. It's just clear to me that, like, when I sing, the room is captivated, and Kevin's over there. He seems to be a distraction lately. I don't know. Hit me back. Something we could talk to. Oh, shit. Hang on. Kev's coming. All right. Hit me back. Hey, Andrew. This is Kevin from Little Stranger. I know we got a lot of really great shows coming up. Just kind of wanted to sidebar about one quick thing. Do you think we should get rid of John from the band? I just, like, the last couple shows, I was just, like, watching the crowd, and, like, you know, he's just sitting there. He just sits there the whole time, and, like, I just feel like you've got it, and we've got it. You know, we've got it figured out. We know what we're doing. Yeah, just hit me back. Maybe text me first. I'd rather not, John, see that you're calling. But I love you. Bye. And
what's up, bud?
Little Stranger, man. We're here fucking side by side. Oh, yeah, never been better. Dude, we are feeling good. We're feeling like a unit, and we are ready to come on tour. Let's get back on the road, baby. Let's tear up these shows. If you're going to hit either of us up, do it in a group message, man, because this is a team. Team, one unit, always. On three, break, Kev. One, two, three, break.
All right. Oh, we're going to clap. All right, and we're back. Andy Frasco's World Saving Podcast. I'm Andy Frasco. How we doing? How's our heads? How's our minds? Are we staying out of trouble? Are we not letting week 7 of this tour, this is the final week of tour with Little Stranger. I'm sad about it. It is. But we're also celebrating because it is the 200th episode of the podcast. Wow. What an accomplishment. We did it. Can't believe you guys have been listening to me talk shit and talk and get interviews in with your favorite guests for 200 episodes. I remember when this thing was just a dream. I got off cocaine. I was like, I have so much more free time now. What am I going to do with it? I'm not going to go, wild boy shit. I'm going to use my time to try to help the common good. And I can't believe it. After 200 episodes, we're still rocking. So I just got to say thank you so much for being here. We got a big episode for you tonight. A big episode. Morgan Wade. Yes, she is a badass. I'm like really into her music. I'm really into her vibe. She's like kind of like a don't give a fuck. We're going to play music. I'm going to do what I want to do type of person. And you know, I grew up in that punk rock and roll world, and that's the shit I'm looking for. So shout out to Morgan Wade for being on the show, being the season finale. Episode 200. It's a big deal. I just can't get over that we're at 200 episode. I'm in a hotel in Michigan right now. We're all getting tattoos in the other room. Hey, Chris, come in here for a second. I flew out one of my best friends since middle school, Chris Velasquez, to tattoo the whole band, both bands. We're all getting the same tattoo because this tour means a lot. Christopher Velasquez out here. Looking like a surgeon. How you doing? Get over here. Sit on this couch. The camera's there.
Oh, what's up?
What's up? No, keep it on. It looks like a surgeon, yeah. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing well, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, dude.
I get this mic going, too.
Nice board you got going here.
Thanks. Chris, thanks for doing this.
Thank you, man.
Do you like the guys?
I love them, man.
This is the first time you've seen my band play for...
Very long time. Yeah. Very long time. It's been, I was thinking talking about with Ernie the other night, I think in Cleveland, and it's been like over maybe like 2013?
Yeah, 2013.
A really long time. I mean, like I keep up with the socials and stuff, but like I was just telling Sean the other day, it's like seeing you guys get sharper every time.
Right.
Every time. It's just really incredible, man.
We've been friends since middle school, and we've always had big dreams of being artists and stuff since the beginning. And now you're like one of the best tattoo artists in the country.
Oh, thank you, bro.
And it's really beautiful to see. And to see us now, grown-ass men, still doing what we love. You know, yeah. I was just talking about that with the podcast fans.
It's impressive. Well, I mean, we've been reminiscing a lot this weekend. And it's like, I saw you when you were younger you know, promoting, putting it together, really being tenacious. And like, you know, when we're kids, you know, it's like we all were creative. We all wanted to do what we wanted to do.
Right.
And like, you know, to be able to be lucky enough to pursue still.
Yeah.
And for us to be so well-rounded about it is really, really, it's a gift, man. It's a blessing.
I'm going to clap it up for us for never giving up. Let's go. Chris is a G, and, you know, we flew him out here so we could all have this memory because this tour has been such a memory. It's it's beautiful. Great. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's been great.
So I love Chris. So if you are in the L.A. area or if you're in a band and want to have some band bonding, fly out Chris Velasquez. He's really the best. I'll take a picture. I'll post the tattoos of what we all got. But you guys, go get tattoos from Chris. He's honestly the most talented artist I know out there. And I'm just so thankful that we get a piece of his art through this tour. So thanks for being here on the show.
Dude, I appreciate it, man. It's been great. You know, it's so funny. Like, I was telling...
put your mic closer.
Oh, closer. I've been telling some of the guys here that, like... you know, scratching that itch because, you know, I used to play music and stuff. So it's like being out here, seeing it just drop in right away. Everybody's been so sweet. Everybody's so nice.
We're all in this together.
Amazing guys. Amazing people you have here.
Well, let's do it.
I expect nothing less, but still.
Yeah. And I just love that you got to see us play those sold out shows and see, you know, it's like I grew up watching Chris's band play and idolizing, like, I want to be on that stage like those guys were. And to see us both doing the fucking thing is cool. So
yeah, man, it's like, again, it's, you don't really see that a lot.
No.
And so it is really amazing to see.
I love it.
So,
well, go back.
Love you,
there,
brother.
Go back there and tattoo Jason's ass with our tattoo. And I love you, buddy. Love you. Thanks for being here with us. It's awesome. Chris Velasquez, everyone. Unbelievable. Go get him. Go get him, partner. Oh, man. But how's everyone doing? Are we feeling good? You know, whenever there's like 1 week left of tour, I kind of like go into denial mode that this tour is going to end. You know, it's like I had the same feeling with Big Something when we went on that Big Something wrestling tour. That was a monumental moment in my life too. And it just feels, it's sad that it's all coming to an end, but I'm so thankful that I had the opportunity to do that because, you know, like I said, life is short. And we don't know when it's our turn to leave ever this beautiful party. So like when we have glimpses of life, that is beautiful. That is something worth remembering and something that makes your heart full. You have to take a step back and realize this is beautiful. And we need to appreciate those moments and not, you know, take them for granted. Because, you know, life, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat it. Life is fucking hard. And there's more moments than none where life will fucking beat you up and just hurt you and just sting you and you just got to keep fighting for those beautiful moments. Like now, like today, we're all getting tattoos at a hotel. It's like our rock star moment. I'm fucking pumped. So don't take life for granted and don't take the moments that are beautiful for granted because you never know when they're coming back and they'll always come back, but as we get older, those beautiful moments get, you know, less. It's more, life is stressful as you get older. So appreciate the good times that we have. Speaking of good times, 200th episode, we have Deep Eddie Vodka sponsoring the podcast now. Shout out to Deep Eddie. Let's go. Our boys. Thank you. Jason, thank you for getting us set up here. Nick's not here to do the pitch for Deep Eddie, but I did have some Deep Eddie this tour. Jason's been nice enough to ship some Deep Eddie on the road while we're gigging, and I fuck with it. You know, I'll be honest with you, I'm not really into the sugary ones because I'm just not like a sugary guy, but the clear Deep Eddie vodka is damn good, and I do drink vodka sodas if you ever hang out with me during the day and not on stage. I do. That's my drink of choice now, and I do like it. So grab yourself some Deep Eddie. They're everywhere. They're out of Austin, Texas. It's pure goodness. I used to drink Tito's a lot, and I think they match up. I'd like to see them in a fist fight, Tito's and Deep Eddie, to see who wins because it's pretty close. It's a pretty close match. So grab yourself some Deep Eddie vodka. And also while I'm pitching, Dialed In Gummies. Our boys just re-signed for the next season. Let's go, our people. Fucking love it. Denver, Colorado. Thank you for letting me call this home. Yeah, Dialed In Gummies. If you want great gummies that taste good, that have cool packaging, and they collab with all your favorite growers. If you want a Jack Herrera strain, they got it. If you want something from Kush Club, they got it. I'm telling you, if you're in the Denver area or Colorado area, go grab yourself some Dialed In Gummies, because first off, they're good people. And, you know, we're all about that independent mom and pop company on this podcast. And so you got to get some deep, you got to get some deep, Eddie, and you got to get some Dialed In Gummies in your system, because we're all in this together. They help support your boy, follow their dreams. And I want you to help them, you know, feel cool and shit. It's like, tell them Frasco sent you. So grab yourself some Dialed In Gummies and some Deep Eddie Vodka. All right, guys, this is the last week of tour. I tried to get Little Stranger over here. I know the promotion says Little Stranger's coming. But we've been on a bender. And I told those guys, go to bed. Sleep all day, because we need to finish this tour with a bang, baby. And when I say a bang, I mean a big bang, because Talia Hall was so memorable because it was the first time, you know, I've always wanted to play theaters, and to sell out a beautiful theater like that, it just gives you that little pep in your step saying, I could keep going. And we've been selling out all these shows on this tour, and I just can't thank our fans enough for coming out and supporting this weird ride with Little Stranger. And we had Paul McDonald out here. It's just, I'm just very thankful. And I'm very thankful for our fans buying merch and just coming out, giving us gifts and shit and just hugging. And just, we're a fucking team. And I appreciate it so very much. But this is the last week of shows, guys. And I need you guys coming out. Wilmington's already sold out, or almost. I think there's like 20 tickets left. Let's go. So, let me tell the dates, and then we'll get this Morgan Wade podcast started. On this Wednesday, we are playing in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yes, hope to see the Big Something Boys. They might sit in. Nick McDaniels might sit in if he's in town. Oh no, fuck! They're recording a new record. I think in like Minnesota or something. Damn it! All right, never mind. But we'll get some North Carolina sit-ins to come in. And then Thursday, we're in Wilmington, North Carolina. That I told you that show's almost sold out. Friday, we are in Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, Terminal West. You know how much I love the Claremont Lounge. I'm going to try to bring some old titties out to that show. Old strippers. I love the Claremont Lounge. So I think that show only has 100 tickets left, too. So get on that. You know, people ramp up, you know, ticket sales this week. So I know that show is going to sell out. And then Nashville, we're playing a big room, so there's plenty of tickets. So if you want to be a last minute Nancy and go buy some tickets last minute to Nashville, it's all good. You're going to have plenty of space to do that. And then New Year's Eve run, two nights in Charleston, back in the home turf. I call it the home turf, but it feels like home to me over there. And then Thursday, that, you know, that last weekend of New Year's Eve. So I think it's a Tuesday. It's like I'm doing four shows coming up to New Year's. The two nights in Charleston, one night in Richmond, Virginia. That's going to be a blast. And then we're going back to Buffalo, baby. Woo! I did bite too much that my mouth can handle. That show is almost sold out. And I promise people, if we sell it out, I'm jumping through a table. So if you want to be part of history and let me jump through a table, get out there. I know I've been playing Buffalo a lot, but let's end the year with a bang. Close it out, the Town Ballroom. All right, guys. I got the 200th episode. I learned a lot in these 200 episodes about, you know, addiction, mental health, following their dreams, divorce, heartbreak. And I can't wait for to learn more in the next 200 episodes. This podcast is extremely important to me, and I talk to you guys, and I know how important it is to hear from your favorite musicians as well, the stuff that, you know, all the other journalists aren't talking about. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for being part of this ride. We're in this together. It's one weird shit show, but if we do it together, at least we'll have smiles on our faces when throughout the shit show. So stay strong out there. Stay happy. This is the last interview of the season, but we have two more episodes, bonus episodes coming up next week. I did mushrooms with Todd Glass, and we did a Shroomy Christmas. That episode's 2.5 hours long, and I do not want to cut it. There's just so much gems. There's a lot of silliness in it. So, you know, that's something you could put on at the dinner table and hear me and Todd and Dolov and Steve Fine Arts, a really great director. He does a lot of directing for, like, comedy shoots. Like, he's doing the Marc Maron special. He's done a bunch of stuff. And we just take mushrooms and laugh and talk about life and what family is to us. Then the week after that, we have the award ceremony. Yes. World Saving Award Ceremony. To finish out the year, we brought Ryan Stasek in, and we're giving out awards to the jam scene like we did last year, and awards for the best stuff that happened on this tour. So don't miss that. And then season 5 starts in January, and we've already locked in some amazing guests. I'll keep it a secret, but honestly, they're fucking huge, and I can't believe how big this podcast is getting. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you guys. This is a dream come true to talk to you through the web and talk to you through my shows, and you accept both sides of me, and can't thank you enough. Okay, guys, enjoy Morgan Wade, and let's get it. Let's have a great year. Thank you for season 4. Thanks for all the guests. Thanks for everyone being part of this show. Let's get this shit popping. All right, I love you. All right, next up on the interview hour, we have Morgan Wade. Yes, I love her. She's an amazing songwriter out of Floyd, Virginia, and I can't say enough about her. Songs are great. She just speaks from the heart. She was founded at Floyd Fest, actually. We used to play there. Hey, Chris, play a little Morgan Wade while I'm talking about her. And in my head, you see a look pretty, you should be. Was founded by the Jason Isbell crew and just started to blow up. Her new record is so good, and I'm just so happy for her. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the interview hour, Miss Morgan Wade. Every single secret in your mind. Come on, baby, we got nothing but time. You say I'm too young for you.
How are you?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. I watch you. I watch your workout motivations. It pumps me up.
There you go. What, there you go, man.
What's you know, in your bio it says you were an alcoholic, I'd say, and I wouldn't call it an alcoholic, but yeah, maybe you were. But do you think working out and having a way to like sweat out and like get toxins out is a way to heal your alcoholism?
Oh, for sure. I mean, too, it's a thing that I remind myself because I'm so addicted to working out now. Like, I got up 5 a.m. this morning, like, was able to, I'm like, I'm running on the treadmill watching the sunrise, and, you know, there's still people in the bed. So, for me, I'm like, these are things I could not do if I was drinking the night before. I mean, there's absolutely no way. So, yeah, it's a good thing for me to remind myself of.
What have you learned about life since you've like switched the gears into a healthy mind state?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm still learning, but I would not be where I'm at. Like, I don't think I would have met the people that I've met if I hadn't got sober. I think that my work ethic is a lot better, you know, it's less sloppy. I'm not, you know, I'm focusing and I'm channeling my energy into, you know, important shit. I'm not just over there getting hammered. And, you know, I don't think that, I wouldn't have wanted to have worked with me, you know, if I kept at that pace.
Were you hard to deal with?
I wouldn't say I was like necessarily, I mean, yeah, sometimes I'm not going to lie, but you know, like I don't think I was as, obviously I wasn't responsible. I mean, you drink and you lose a lot of the, you know, maturity.
Right.
And, yeah, so no, like, if I didn't get sober, I wouldn't be, like, Peter.
Was it that bad? Why don't you tell me, like, the the breaking point? Where were you?
Yeah, like my problem was I wasn't dealing with, you know, the problems that I had, the depression and everything. So I started drinking my freshman year of college, and I was like, man, I'm pretty good at this. Like,
yeah,
I can handle some alcohol. And then I started playing music, and you might not get paid,
yeah,
but you can get some free alcohol. So right. Obviously I was going to take advantage of what I could get. And I was also playing music with a bunch of guys who were like, not just any kind of guy. They were like really big dudes. So they could throw back some alcohol, no problem. So I'm like trying to keep up with them. And of course, I'm not blaming them, but I'm just saying like that's what I was used to. That's what I was around. And right. I played a show, my very first show in New York. And I couldn't even tell you where it was at. All I know is it was just, you know, it was a shit show. Right. And as soon as we got there, as soon as my feet hit the ground, it's like, I got to go, you know, go to a bar, get some drinks. I drank more that night than I have drank my whole entire life. I couldn't even tell you how much. And I was at that point, too, where, and I'm small, man. I'm like 5'2". I'm pushing it for the 5'2". And so I can really throw some alcohol back. I mean, and I woke up that next morning just kind of like laying there in that bed, you know, not remembering what I'd done the night before. Like, and I had just done that so many times. And that whole next day, you know, I just felt really dark and depressed and just alcohol really made me suicidal coming back down the next day. And like my routine was just like, all right, if you want to beat a hangover, you just start drinking again. You drink a couple beers or whatever, and it would always bring me down. But that day, we went to Penn Station, and I was like, hey, can one of y'all grab me a drink? And I meant like a water. Well, they automatically assumed I wanted a beer. So they brought me a beer, and I took one sip of it, and I was just like, nope, no more. And I was like, I gotta get on track. Like, my mental health cannot continue on this route. Or I was like, I don't think that I'll survive it. Like, I don't think I'll live if I do not get sober. And that was it. That was June 17th, 2017. And I have not drank since. I went home and I got Russell Brand's book, Recovery.
Oh,
I started
great book.
Like listening to podcasts and working out and just surrounding myself with good people. And I was like, I got to find my new thing to kind of have. That way I'm not like reaching for a drink. And so I got really into sparkling water. And I became that person that like pushes sparkling water on everybody.
Let's go. I love that. I'll clap to that. Let's go. Let's go. I love it. So 2017, were you like seeing momentum in your career, or was it like it wasn't going anywhere yet?
No, it wasn't going anywhere. You know, I was obviously, that was just kind of, I say it wasn't going anywhere. I believe that every stepping stone, you know, has like led me here. But after I got sober was when I really started kind of putting that work in. It's funny, I got sober in that following Monday when I got back. I started a new job, which was tax reassessment.
Oh my God. The reason
I took this job is because I only had worked Monday through Thursday full time. So I had Friday, Saturday, Sunday off so I could go play music.
Right.
But still, you know, I wasn't making any money playing music. But I had this other job, so I was able to, you know, still do that. And that went on, you know, 2017, 2018. And then, you know, I was just kind of chugging along. And then in 2019, I met Sadler.
Yeah.
Vaden.
From Jason Isbell's?
Yeah, yeah. His lead guitar player. And I played a festival, and this guy came up to me afterwards. He's like, hey, you know, I run sound for Jason, and they're playing later. He was like, I think the guys would really like to hear your music. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, and I was a big fan, but I didn't expect to hear anything. You know, people come up all the time, say stuff to you. And literally, like, the next day, Sadler sent me a DM on Instagram. Was like, hey, I love your music. Like, you want to chat? Like, maybe we can write together or something. I'd like to see what you got going on. I'm getting into producing music. So I was like, sure, absolutely. And so a couple days later, we hopped on a call and we scheduled just a Skype. And the first song that ever played him the pitch was Wilder Days.
Oh,
I was like, I got
God.
This idea for this song. And so I pitched him Wilder Days and he was like, oh my gosh, I love this. You know, like, let's get together and finish this song. And so I went out to Nashville, met him for the first time and, you know, went through a bunch of songs that I had. And then we recorded Wilder Days in his like makeshift studio at his house. And that was honestly where it started. And Sadler, you know, he became like my mentor. And so he started introducing me to people because I didn't have a booking agent. I didn't have a manager. I had, you know, didn't have a producer, a label, any of that. So he, you know, took me to meet the folks at William Morris, you know, and that's, you know, Johnny and Haley that I have as my booking agents now, and they're great. And he introduced me to David Macias over at 30 Tigers. And it all just kind of started, you know, coming together. But we, you know, we still didn't have all that, the money for a label, like, or, you know, money from a label. So we decided, we recorded Wilder Days. Of course, we had that one, and we went and recorded like 3 or 4 more songs. And we're like, we'll put out an EP, you know, and just kind of like self-fund it. But then 30 Tigers wanted to take me on. And David Macias was like, no, your songs are so great. You need a full record. Don't put out an EP. Let's do a full length. So they gave us the money. We went in the studio with Paul Ebersole and we recorded Reckless. And
holy,
it was finished.
Shit.
And then the pandemic hit and COVID happened. And so I'm just sitting here with this record and they were like, we were going to put it out August of 2020. And it was like, you know, I sat there and I sat there and I sat there and I was like, you know, what the hell is happening? Like, I really felt like I was getting somewhere in my career. I thought like this shit's going to, you know, we're going to put this record out and ended up pushing it, which was the smart thing to do. And we put it out, you know, March of 2021 and everything just, you know, went from there.
Yeah.
And I think it was out a couple months. Maybe not even that long. It might have been like a month. And I had like every label in Nashville, you know, contacting my manager.
So sick.
And at first I wasn't interested. I was just like, you know, I'm happy when I'm at. I love 30 Tigers. But David Macias, being the great guy he is, he was like, you need to take these meetings. You need to talk to these people.
Right.
And I did. And the only one that like stuck out to me was Sony. And you know, they didn't, the label head Randy, he was like, he'd listened to the whole record. And actually what was so funny about that was Sony had set up a meeting with me and I'd had a meeting with them and he wasn't on it. At that same exact time, he was at the beach on vacation and his son was like, hey, I want you to listen to this girl, Morgan Wade.
Oh my
I want you
God.
To listen to her new record that came out. And then his daughter said the same thing. And so then he listened to it on repeat the whole way home and told him at the office, hey, we should get a meeting. And they're like, we just had a meeting with her. And he was like, we'll get her on the phone again. I want to talk to her. And so we had that meeting and, you know, he was like, I don't want to change anything. This record's amazing. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, you know, I've got a really personal relationship, like a friendship with David Macias over at 30 Tigers. I was like, I can call him at 6 o'clock in the morning and he answers and he was like, screw that. You can call me at 5 a.m. And I was like, okay,
this
I like
is my
this
guy.
Energy
this is my
right
guy.
Here.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I made him work for it, man.
Because yeah.
I mean, this went on and I was like, you got to give me a great deal because I was like, I own all my stuff. Like this has to be, you know, great. And, yeah. So I ended up, I told him, I was like, all right, man, I'll sign with you. But I texted him. I was in Austin, Texas, and I found this French bulldog back in Virginia that I wanted. And I texted him. I said, you buy me this French bulldog. I'll name it Sony. And I'll sign
with you. Shut the fuck up. Are you serious?
Let's go. He wrote me the check.
Let's go.
He wrote me the check.
I love
that. And I went and picked that. I went and picked that dog up in a Target parking lot. And it's the most spoiled damn dog in the world. But I was like, all right. And I mean, I could have taken that dog and just ran and never signed. Yeah. But obviously, what? I did. And yeah.
What was the difference between your conversations with like a Sony and the other major labels? Because I know like a lot of people are just like, don't really care about the artist. They just know that it's a hitting while the iron's hot type of thing. What was the difference between the conversations between the other majors and with Sony?
Well, so with Sony, I knew he actually, like Randy listened to the record.
Yeah.
You know, and he, you could tell. And I was like, well, what do you want to change about it? And he's like, change? He's like, I don't want to change anything.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to like re-release this record. And like his thing was, he was like, I don't just see it. He was like, you don't have to be in just one genre. He was like, you could be in multiple genres. Like this record is not just one lane. Right. And he was, well, that's what I loved about it. It was like, whereas the other labels were very just like, you know, one-sided. And the thing about Sony is, you know, they have Kane Brown who, you know, fits in a lot of different molds. And then they had like Luke Combs and Miranda Lambert and these people that didn't necessarily, they're kind of the outsiders and didn't really like fit in, you know, at first with other labels. And so they like took them in. And so it was kind of like a mixed match crowd. And I liked that.
Like an orphanage.
Right. Like an orphanage. So I was like, okay. But you know, it was just like they didn't want anything from me. He was like, we don't want anything from you. Like, we have the resources. He's like, you could stay with 30 Tigers. He was like, but we have bigger resources to get that record out there. And, you know, he was right for sure. Cause I mean, I think I would be doing good, but I don't think I would be here if, you know, they hadn't taken the record, re-released it.
Right.
You know, and put the deluxe out and pushed it because they pushed it really hard. So, you know, a lot of people were like, you're going to go with the major label and you'll lose your creativity and they're going to make you do this and they're going to dictate what socks you wear, you know, like all that whatever bullshit. And no, that's not the case. Like, they don't make me do anything I don't want to do.
You're a person that would bail out of something when they start telling you what to do as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I make my opinions very well known. And,
have you been like that your whole life?
No, I wouldn't say I've been like that my whole life. I think maybe in a way, but I was also, you know, kind of, you know, that was the other things. I graduated high school and immediately went to college, and I, you know, was like pre-med. I was like, I wanted to go into cardiothoracics.
What?
I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, then it just kind of hit me. It's like, you don't love that.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. That's just what you think you're supposed to do. And that was when I really started changing and kind of coming into my own. And then I think it really, really changed once I got sober. And I mean, I still feel like I'm evolving now. I still will sometimes go say yes to something. And then I'm like, why did I say yes to that? I'm not doing that anymore.
Right.
I'm not ever going to agree to something I don't want to do, no matter how much money or whatever it's going to bring me. It's like, if I'm not going to be happy doing that, I'm not doing it.
Let's fucking go. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Because was it hard to... It's hard to say no, especially when you're getting all these opportunities. And like, we start thinking about our mental health. We start thinking about, you know, I keep thinking about if you were still drinking when you met Sadler, do you think you would have taken that relationship for granted?
Probably. And I don't think I could have handled it, especially, you know, too, because around that time is when I started trying to like get, taking meetings to get a manager and labels and booking agents. And I think, you know, you go out to these meetings, you can drink. I mean, they're not going to stop you. They're going to buy you the alcohol. And right. So I think I really would have screwed something up then, because you know, I'm much more of a, I would tell them, I'd be like, hey, I don't want to take any more lunch meetings. You want to have a meeting with me? Let's meet in the morning and have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So we can get like right to the point. And that's very much how I am. And if I was still drinking, I wouldn't be that way. And I think I would have come across sloppy and, you know, I wouldn't have had a full mental focus on what I wanted.
Is image important to you, of how people perceive you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie like that. I think that that's something that I'm still working on and trying to be a lot better about. When I obviously first started, my following was small, so I wasn't used to the negative comments.
Right.
You know, anybody that was following me, it's like, okay, they know me, they'd see me at a show or something like that. It was very small. So as things have progressed and I've grown bigger, you know, I've learned, I mean, for a while, I think once Reckless first came out, I would get up in the mornings and immediately look at my phone and I would do this thing. And it was like I was intentionally trying to cause harm to myself because I'd go look at the YouTube comments.
Oh, man.
And I would go like read those. And I was just like doing that, like self-sabotaging myself. And there could be 1,000 nice comments, but I'm going to focus on, you know, the two grown-ass men that are sitting in their mom's basement yeah. that want to tell me, yeah. you know, my tattoos are gross.
Yeah, fuck
you that. Know, it's just shit like that that doesn't even pertain to the music. But, you know, I still have a really hard time with that because I'm like, why don't they, you know, why don't you like me? But I'm realizing, you know, there's a quote that's like, most art is ridiculed before it's revered. And it's like, you know, you put that out there and you're going to get that. I mean, that's just how it is. But I still, you know, I still struggle with that. I think a lot of us struggle with that. Anytime somebody tells you you suck,
yeah.
you know, you like, no matter who you are, it's kind of like, you know, I have really bad OCD, so I try not to ruminate on it. I try not to like let it continue to go through my head. But, you know, that's definitely something I'm still working on.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, this is like the first couple of years where my band is finally getting more popular. And, you know, now I don't think about all the great comments. I think about that one fucking shady asshole who is just making fun of whatever they want to make fun of. When, why am I putting all our energy in this? Like, I think about like childhood. Like, what made us want to be accepted by everybody? What was your childhood like?
You know, my childhood, my parents, my mom had me when she was 17. And, they got divorced when I was 5. So I lived with my mom, you know, Monday through Friday. And then I'd go to my dad's on the weekend. And I ended up spending most of the time on the weekends with my grandmother. It wasn't a great situation in my dad's house. He got remarried. And it was, you know, not the most wonderful situation there. And so I spent a lot of time with my grandma, which was like my favorite place to be. You know, she was an amazing woman. And I basically lived with her. And she practically raised me, you know, her and my mom. And until I was about 13, she passed away. And so then I think I really just kind of took charge of taking care of myself there for a while. I kind of like, you know, was pretty strong-willed. But I always really did. And I think a lot of that came from, you know, my childhood of just, you know, wanting love from adults
yeah.
that weren't ever really giving me their full attention and their love. And I really just wanted that so bad. Like, why don't you love me? Why don't you care about me like how I need to be cared for? And I noticed that pattern a lot. You know, I'm in therapy and that's something that I notice that I just associate that. Well, you don't like me. I need to make you like me. I need you to like me. And so when I'm having those thoughts, I realize I'm like, all right, that's just a deeper rooted issue. And it doesn't matter. Like, focus on the people that really do love you and really care about you.
Yeah, I agree. Why was your dad's house so toxic?
My stepmom at the time, not my current stepmom. My current stepmom is amazing and I love her. She was kind of in and out, and I think they were together like 6 years, and It was just a toxic environment. A lot of like bipolar issues going on, and I never felt very safe in that environment.
Yeah.
And you know, I was, you know, she had two kids, and then there was me. I was just kind of like that middle child that didn't really fit in there. And so, you know, and I had a lot of anxiety and stuff as a kid. So going to my grandma's was definitely like, you know, powerful. My place.
And you were writing songs since you were seven. So like, were you insecure to show like your parents your songs, or what was that like? Who was the first one to say like, Morgan, you're actually really fucking good at this?
Yeah, I was always like, I did not show my parents or anything, and I also didn't write stuff down because I didn't want anybody to read it.
Why?
I was just very, I just didn't know, you know, I was like, is this good? Is this good stuff? And I was just a very, like, I think, too secretive child. Like, you know, I had a lot that I held in. And so I remember just like I would sit in my room and I would write stuff in my head, and which I honestly think was the best thing for me, because I was writing for me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't writing for anybody else. And like to this day, if it's going to be something really good, if I'm going to use it, I'm going to memorize it in my head. It's going to stick in my head. Right. And I think that was, you know, a tactic that I learned then. It was like, all right, if you want to remember this, remember it. And so I did really good with that. But when I, you know, it wasn't until my freshman year of college that I started playing out.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of was inspired then. I was like, all right, screw it. And I remember my first little show that I ever played, you know, it was like everybody could come up and kind of do three songs. It's kind of like an open mic-ish thing. My grandmother came to that. My grandmother's still alive, my mom's mom, and she was just like, you know, basically like, what the hell? Like, you can sing. You can sing really good. Like, what, you know, it was just like, you know, everybody was so confused because they were like, and I was just, it was just always that thing that I was like, I just don't think I'm good enough. And I think that obviously did come from my childhood and just feeling like I'm not good enough to do this right. or this or this. And then I was actually really, I'm actually apparently pretty good at it, what I do. But yeah, it was just a real, because I remember I told my mom, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go play music. And my mom was like, you know, she was like, oh, guitar. And I was like, no, I'm going to go sing. And my mom's just like, yo, everybody's just kind of like, what? But, you know, you. And so it was a big shock to everybody because they were like, you know, again, what the hell?
Yeah. And like in your brain, like, you're like, I've been doing this for myself since I was seven. So it must have been a trust issue of like, it was hard to trust anyone to like open yourself up and not have them pick you apart a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, you know, a big thing for me. And I remember, you know, my mom would always ask me, you know, like the great questions. My mom was great. And she would, you know, ask me, do you feel safe? You know, like all those questions. And even when I didn't, I just would not tell her the truth. You know, I was very secretive and kept everything in. So to me, it's like not really any shock that I wasn't, because I didn't talk about things, you know, I didn't open up about, you know, the things that I endured as a child. Like, I didn't tell my mom any of that stuff until like a few years ago.
Right.
You know, so I was just always very secretive and kept it in. But like writing stuff, even though it was in my head, was my outlet. And sometimes at my grandmother's house, I would write some things down. And I would like hide them because I didn't want anybody. But she's like, I'll still go and I'll find like an old cookbook and I'll find like something that you like scribbled on a piece of paper and hid. So,
you know,
I'm like, yeah.
And I was thinking like maybe that's what triggered the depression is suppression. You're suppressing all your feelings all your life that you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know how to release this demon of depression. Like, Do you work on that a little more now as you get older and sober and consider, or do you still have those, like, you know, that wet blanket feeling a lot of the times? And does depression still hit you hard?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm still like a work in progress. And, you know, there's parts of me that I think I still like keep inside. I think we've all kind of got that to an extent. And that's like something that I'm working on, is just, you know, being okay with who I am and evolving and changing. I'm obviously a lot better than I was, but I still, you know, I'm 5 years into my sobriety, but I'm still in recovery. You never stop being in recovery with, you know, figuring out who you are. And I, you know, who I was 6 months ago is not who I am right now. You know, I'm a work in progress, but I definitely am a lot better than I was.
That's great. I mean, with pressure of, like, you know, as a musician, and you killing it on your first record, is there any pressure in your head to make it better the second album, or do you not let that pressure get to you?
I wish I could say that. I think there's moments that I'm like, no, I'm not going to be pressured. But yeah, because I mean, that would, Reckless, we went in and we just recorded it with nothing. Yeah. I wasn't recording that hoping I was going to have a radio single.
Right.
I just recorded stuff that I believed in, and we went in and made these songs, and we had fun doing it, and it was new to me. Whereas now I'm like, yeah, I put out a really good record, so this next one, I don't want it to flop.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants that. So there is a lot of pressure, but I feel like I'm growing and I'm getting better, and I'm still experiencing things. And, you know, now I'm able to go write with some really good writers. I'm able to go meet new people that are helping me. And so, you know, I'm always going to like the newest project.
Yeah.
That's always going to be my favorite thing, you know, as you go on. And I feel like I left the Reckless era and I'm like moving on to the next one. So for me, you know, Sadler and I, we discuss it, and he's like, let's just make a record we believe in and focus on each song being really good. And he's really great about being like, you know, we, once again, you know, Reckless was, everything went together. It was like chapter one, you know, down two, three, four, whatever. I want this next record to have a story too, to where they all go together. And it's just not a bunch of stuff thrown on an album.
And what's your story right now?
Man, I feel like it's just a season of change. I feel like a lot of stuff's changing in my life, and it's changing really quick. And so that's what I'm just kind of focusing on, you know, holding on and not getting too married to any situation, being like, things change, and that's, you know, focusing on when I'm going through a really difficult time. That's generally when I come out stronger and I have, you know, more growth during that time. So that's where I'm at right now, is just kind of adjusting to the new life I found myself in.
Yeah, and adjusting to the confidence. I mean, at first it felt like you're still trying to find yourself. Now you feel like, oh, I am a bad motherfucker. I am a great songwriter. I can be with this room, you know? I don't know, maybe that's how I pump myself up now as I get older in my career. But, you know, it's not even about narcissism. Yeah. It's just about confidence that, like, you deserve to be there just like anyone else. That's why I'm so curious about your conversations with Sadler. Like, what are your conversations with Sadler about songwriting? Like, what have you learned the most from Sadler about writing songs?
You know, Sadler was the first person I ever wrote anything with, you know, so we feed off of each other really well. We'll sit down and we know if we've got something or if we don't have something, but we're really good about bouncing ideas like back and forth. But he, you know, he just reminds me to like enjoy it and not to, if I don't feel like this song's going in the right direction, I don't like it, he's like, don't push it. Like, just be creative with it. But again, the biggest thing for him is he just continually reminds me, like, you should be having fun. You should enjoy this. This is your passion. Right. And you need to, like, not focus. He was like, not every song has to be a damn radio single. He was like, we're not focusing on that. We didn't do that with the first record. We're not going to do that with the second one. He was like, we're not going to let anybody push us around or, you know, try to speed us up and force us to get something out right now. He's like, we are going to focus on putting out the best art possible that we're proud of and we know it's good.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I mean, and it takes the pressure up. You know, it goes back to that other thing about your sophomore records. Like, we're not putting the pressure on you, Morgan, to have.
Yeah.
We're just going to write art and until we're proud of it. Because at the end of the day, like, why are we doing art? We're not doing art for them. We're doing art for us.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Fuck yeah. Let's go. Good hand on your. I like this. Let's keep it popping. I like that. I see like a young kid in your Instagram feed a lot. Is that who is that?
So I have 4 younger siblings, 11, 9, 5, and 3.
Holy shit. Your mom?
Yeah. My mom, she got remarried and had, four more little kids. It's like 24 years difference between the youngest and I and 16 between the oldest and I, and they're great. They're fun and.
What it's advice fun. Do you give them about your mom?
About my mom is I'm like, you know, they like go easy on her. Cause I remember sometimes I didn't go as easy on my mom as I should have. But like, I tell them, I'm like, I get it. Cause you know, the 11-year-old starting to go through, you know, changes and like she's growing up. So I'm like, I know it seems like the end of the world right now, but like, you might be getting annoyed and not want to do something with your parents, but I'm like, one day you're going to be my age and you're going to call your mom 45 times a day just to be like, what you doing? Yeah. You know, I was like, things change. It's like you get older and you start to realize, hey, like, you know, and I tell them all the time that I'm like, you know, some kids, they don't have parents in their lives or they don't have good parents in their lives or whatever. I was like, we've got a great mom. You know, so to appreciate that. But honestly, they're such good kids. And they're very critical on music. Like they will humble the hell out of you. The 4-year-old, I was riding with her and she wanted to listen to Reckless. And I'm like, all right, you're the only person that I'm gonna sit in the car listening to myself with. Like, fine. Like, and I, you know, I've been called a narcissist quite a few times, but, you know, I'm like, I'm actually not a narcissist and I don't sit around and listen to myself, but I'll do it with the 4-year-old, you know, like, okay. And we're riding down the road and Last Cigarette comes on. And so she's back there singing. Well, I start singing along and I'm stopped at a light. So I'm like filming her singing and she notices it and she goes, stop singing. You don't sound good in real life like you do on this record. You don't sound as good. And I was like, and I like turned it off and she goes, I said, don't picture me on your phone. And that's what she calls like videos and stuff. Don't picture me. And I was like, is that why you, she was like, put me in my place. Like she didn't want to be filmed. And I was filming her. She's like, I'm gonna get you right back. And I'm like,
respect.
Yeah. So I'm like, they will let you know if they don't like something. But the oldest two, they write songs all the time. Mom will find stuff that they've like written down and they're very much into music. Both of them can sing really well. And I asked mom, like, where did this come from? Cause like my mom don't sing. None of my family is musically inclined like at all. Like it, so it's very interesting that they are, but they'll like mess with my mom because she'll be like, look at this song they wrote. And I was like, that's on the radio. I was like, they didn't write this. I was like, they're playing you right now. They just like ripping somebody off. And my sister goes, yeah, well, I added a couple ooh-oohs into it. So it's mine now. And I was like, man, is that all it takes? All right.
You know, it's so funny with kids. I mean, like it makes sense. Like with the TikTok generation where everyone's just like lip singing to vocals and lip singing to dancing. I mean, it kind of like it's changing their brains saying like, this is now new content, which is kind of weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a big TikTok person. Like I know the label really tries to get me to do stuff on TikTok. I think a lot of TikTok's pretty toxic.
Yeah. Social media.
And I'm on a, like a, social media is all, man, I'm on a little bit of a hiatus right now, and I've kind of like taken a break, and I'm letting my team, like, if I want something posted, they'll go post it for me, and they're kind of like handling things. Cause I mean, people are, it's just, you get so caught up into it. And I really realized I went to my sister's chorus concert, and it was really good. And then we went to dinner, and I'm just like sitting there, like constantly looking at stuff on my phone. I'm like, you just sat here and missed something, because this kid is going to be a completely different kid in 2 weeks, because they grow so fast. Right. And like, you're sitting here missing these moments. And so I've really tried to just back off, and it's, you know, not always good for your mental health. No. You know, like I said, as my career's growing, like reading some of the things that people get on there and say, and like, you're not going to make everybody happy. It doesn't matter what you do. You're going to piss somebody off, and they're going to make shit up and say stuff. So I've just tried to stay off of the internet now. And I've been more motivated.
Yeah, totally. And happier, because I feel like when we judge our happiness between other people's happiness, because we are like such a 1% of people who live on the road, and we see these other people who are happy with their 9-to-5 and their white picket fence, you're like, start having existential crises when you're in a depression zone in a couple for, you know, a stint. Like, oh shit, should I be doing this instead of that? I mean, we can't be judging happiness between happiness, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's, and I mean, like, I'm worse when I'm on the road, because it's like, I think people, I always thought this too. It's like, once I get that tour bus, like, this is gonna, and then now I'm like laying in this dark bus, and you know, I'm back there in my room, and I'm like scrolling. And I think people think it's like a party constantly that you're up there like raging. But I'm like, nah, man, like, I am off that stage. Like, we did the Chris Stapleton run, and it was like, my guys, I'll like walk off, they're finishing up, and they do their little jam. I was like changing into my sweatpants, hanging my clothes up, making my peppermint tea, taking my makeup off, and popping my melatonin by the time they get to the bus. I'm staying out of trouble. Nothing good ever happens. Staying up, you know, if you find yourself up at 2 a.m., I'm like, nothing good has ever come from me being up at 2 a.m. Nothing. I was like, my ass needs to be in the bed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
With that being said,
those are the times.
You're strolling through other people's life, and it's kind of like depressing.
And and I think a main thing for me is it's like, I got to see what people are saying about me.
Right.
I got to see what they're saying. And I really take that stuff to heart, and you know, it's just with every aspect of my life. I beat myself up when I make mistakes, and you know, I think we all make mistakes, and we all, you know, are continually learning. And you know, I'll have people, you know, will make comments, and you know, they'll call me, and you know, whatever the hell they want to call me, a shitty person or whatever, and they're like, you're out here talking about mental health, but you've done X, Y, and Z. I'm like, yeah, well, I'm not saying I'm perfect, man. Like, I'm far from fucking perfect. Like,
right.
And that's just like my main thing is I'm like, growth and mental health, all that stuff, it's not linear.
Right.
Like, you know, you can fall off track. That's, you know, like the night part two, I put that out, and I'm like, you know, I've made mistakes. I've put other people through shit, you know, hurt people. And, you know, so I'm just slowly making these little steps to be better and, you know, forgive myself and have a little bit of grace.
Yeah, I feel that, because I'm, you know, I always approach my music and stuff with the idea of helping people with their mental health. And like, I had to do this Reddit, and I got drilled because I take mushrooms, and I was drinking before. And I'm like, you nailed on the head. Mental health isn't linear. It's, you're just expressing your feelings of how you're dealing with the mental health. And that's our way to process mental health, is to, like, this is how I deal. It's not, maybe you're all are sober, or maybe you're doing your other way to control, but this is how I controlled it. I got out of it, and I need to talk about it through my songs. Like, I fucking hate these hater hoes, I call them, that are just like always just on that shit. They're on that shit just to hate on you.
People, and you know, like, what really bothers me too is it's like, as I've gotten out there more, like, you know, people, they're like coming at me, and I'm like, man, I haven't talked to you in freaking 4 years. Like, yeah. You're only coming after me now because of where I'm at. And I'm like, I don't even remember what the hell you're talking about. And people think they know you from the stuff that you post. And, you know, I put out a very personal, vulnerable record. So they think they know me and that they can tell me whatever the hell they want to tell me, judging me.
Right.
And I'm like, you don't actually know me. And it's like, when it comes down, like, I'm not going to, I hate when I see it, because I had to talk with someone in my family because they like shared something like making fun of Kim Kardashian when she got, you know, passed the bar exam. And I was like, first of all, they were like, well, she took her three times. I was like, first of all, I don't see you getting up off your ass doing anything.
Yeah.
And secondly, I'm like, you're all here making fun of her. I was like, but you would go attack somebody that was making fun of me. Right. I was like, how's that any different? I was like, it's still a person no matter how much fame or money or whatever they got. Yeah. I'm like, you're still attacking. I was like, that's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's mom. That's someone's sister. I was like, y'all would be really upset when people say mean things to me, but you're going to go do the same thing to somebody else. And I was like, it's, you know, it's not cool. And so that's kind of how I look at it. But I've never once been like, hey, I want to go, you know, tell Ariana Grande or somebody that I hate them. You know, I don't. I think she's great. But that's like the example of, I would never go say, oh, I don't like your song.
Right.
I'm like, if you don't fucking like it, then don't fucking listen to it.
Let's fucking go. That's what I'm talking about. That's maturity. Were you like that before? Or did it have to take you to, like, get through this part of your life to, like, mature in that way of mind state?
I think that, no, I'm not going to say I've always been like this, because I'm sure when I was in high school or younger, I probably was, like, you know, tweeting or, you know, commenting on something like, I hate this song, you know, doing that. I was also a stupid kid too. Yeah. You know, I think there's like, which doesn't make it right, but I'm like, you got to grow and learn from that. But I see a lot of just, which is mainly on Facebook. And that's like, it's always some like old dude that just wants to tell me something. I mean, damn, like they'll be like, you, there's just one lady that I had to block her. She repeatedly was like, well, she went and got all this plastic surgery. I'm like, what are you talking about? I was like, I cut like 15 pounds. And yes, I got lip filler. I don't give a flying fuck if you hate that. I'm like, I went and I did it. And I was like, I'm covered in tattoos. So I'm like, I don't know why this would be any shock to you that I would try something a little different with my body.
Yeah. It's just so silly how people are just like trying to belittle anything that someone does that's in success. It's just insecurity, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what was
it
like? What was it like at? I got two more questions. I'll let you go. I know you're busy.
Yay.
This has been great. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and honest
about
this. Oh,
no, this has been great. This is like literally the most fun I've had on a podcast.
Awesome.
Ever. Seriously.
Awesome. I want to talk about you on The Voice because I think this is great. Like, what was the piece? Like, you're such a badass. And then you had to deal with, like, these fucking preppy-ass people of The Voice. What was that like?
So, I've actually been on The Voice twice.
Holy shit.
All right. The first time was in Washington, D.C. I drove up there and, you know, I had my little Volkswagen Jetta, you know, with the 60 miles per gallon diesel. Fucking loved that car.
Yeah.
But I remember no AC, so I'm like pouring sweat. I get into DC. I like this broke college kid. I was starving when I first got there. So I go into this place to get a burger and end up getting like some kind of like $40 cheeseburger. I was like pissed. Like, I have no money. Like, what the hell am I doing? My car gets stuck in a, they had like a pride parade. So I get my car stuck. I couldn't like get out. It was like this whole thing. I finally get into this building to do the audition. And it's like, you had to go through so much security, whatever. I finally get in there and it's just like a line of people. And they point and they're like sing a verse and a chorus of a song. And so then, you know, and it's just this kid and he's just sitting over there, you know, fucking typing on his phone. And everybody sings, and then he's like, all right, y'all did great. No one's going to make it today. Thank you so much.
I was like,
what in the hell? Like, and I just was like, okay. And then whatever. I went through this whole thing. And so then This was like, gosh, a few years ago. I can't even remember now. I just remember that I was already talking to Sadler and had things going. But I got a call. They wanted me to come in for like a special audition, like skip the line kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I went in and it was like, you know, a couple people sitting in there, and you go in and you sing one song, you know, and you can play guitar. And then the other one, they kind of just want it with, you know, instrumental music. And I went in and they were like, where were you at last night? What were you doing? And I was like, I had a show. And they're like, oh, okay. And I was like, yeah, like I do this.
I work.
And they're like, oh, okay. And so like I sang and they were like, okay, like we love this. We love you, whatever. And one of the guys was like, off the record, he was like, nobody else that came in here today would I go pay to see them. He was like, but I would pay to go see you.
Sick.
You know, he was like, I actually appreciate like live music and that stuff. And he goes, but you seem like you didn't give a shit if we said yes or no. I was like, no, I don't. I was like, my mom lives down here, so I get to see them while I'm down here. I was like, you can tell me no. And I was like, I'm going to be fucking fine.
Yeah.
And so like I made it through that. And then, but I was just kind of like, it was like this whole thing. And then they sent me over like looking at that contract as to like what, you know, and it was like all these splits and all this stuff you had to do. And I was like, I want to do this shit anyways. And it became more of the image on the screen and of what do you want to wear? Whose style do you want to copy? You know, like that kind of stuff. What do you want to, and I'm like, and also I was kind of an ass because they asked me, they're like, which judge would you choose? I was like, I don't think I'd choose any of them on there. I would bring back Miley Cyrus and go with her. And they were just kind of like, you know, it's like this whole thing. And I really didn't care about it, but it was also so cliche and they just sucked. And I mean, like a few years ago, they messaged Jason Isbell and was like, hey, we'd love for you to come audition for The Voice. And I'm like, you know who the hell he is? Like, he's one of the most prolific songwriters, yeah, you know, of our time right now. And so,
well, that's,
yeah,
that's,
but my sister reminds everyone.
Yeah. That you're
it
on
was
The
like,
Voice.
She came home and she goes, yeah, I was just telling my friends, my sister tried out for The Voice and she did not make it. Oh. And I was like, yeah. Thank you for telling everybody that, you know.
And, well, but she didn't tell you that you're also selling thousands of tickets around the country. All she was worried about
of
was
of course not. We can't use that. We got to have a little bit of gossip, you know. We got to, little kids on the playground got to have something to shoot the shit about.
I know, and it's like, you know, it's like the whole idea of The Voice, like, if, like, say you weren't, like, popping and, like, already had stuff going with Dirty Tigers and Sadler, you know, that's what people think the music industry is. And that's what's fucked up. These young kids think that's how the music industry is. And it's not about the work ethic. It's about some guy texting on his phone. And then if he hears a good, you know, he's not even listening to you. That's like, it's like the devaluation of the music industry is getting really bad, especially with a TikTok with like 10, no one's like listening to full songs to listen to 10 seconds of fucking songs now. It's just, it drives me fucking nuts. But maybe that's the ADD culture, you know?
I mean, our attention span is like,
like
so short. I mean, you know, and that's,
wild. Fuck it. Well, I'm glad that you did it your own way. Like Frank Sinatra said, my way. I want to know, you know, what's very fascinating. I've been, you know, we're new friends and I hope we become friends because this is fucking awesome. Me and we're vibing.
You're great.
When I first started my career, I was Craigslisting musicians as well for the first 6 months of touring. And you as a girl, you know, did you find any, was it like you're Craigslisting musicians as well as a woman songwriter? Were you getting like creeps? Like give me some of the, what was going on through the Craigslist years?
You know, obviously growing up where I grew up, I don't know. I was in ninth grade selling shit on Craigslist.
Because
I was all about, you know, my grandmother had a beauty shop in her basement. And I used to would do stuff down there and, you know, help do whatever and get, you know, $5 here and there. But I would like I always wanted to save my money. My favorite thing to do was like my, I would save up $100 and go put it in a bank account to save.
Right.
And that's what my grandma taught me. You know, she was very adamant on like, you know, they came from nothing, didn't have any money, and they built what they had. And so I was very much like that. So I, you know, I would hustle online, you know, which I look back, I'm like, who the hell was letting me? I remember selling a futon on Craigslist in ninth grade. And then, like, I remember, you know, just shit like that all the time. But it was, I, for some unknown reason, was like, had no fear when it came to Craigslist. So that was what I decided to do when I wanted to find a band. And I found these guys, and it was like they just needed a singer. It was like they had the drummer, the bass, and the guitar, and they just needed a singer. And I was a freshman in college. I got two of my friends that were like the same height as me. Like, we're all like 5'2", rolling up into this house, Southeast Roanoke. It's kind of like a, this little area where it was at was like, no, yeah. I was like, I had no business going in. We like roll in there. There's some guy just smoking weed in the front yard. It's like, you know, dark outside. He's just out there with the sunglasses on, just like chilling, whatever. Walk in. This house is just look like a hoarder house. Smart thing to do. I go down in the basement where the band is. Like, what the hell was I, you know, like I look back, I'm like, you idiot.
Yeah.
Like, so, of course, I got down there. Everyone was great.
Yeah.
They were super nice. And the bass player, Ed, he was there with his girlfriend, Andra, and they're still great friends of mine to this day. So I am really glad I went down there and met them. But nothing ever came of that band. That didn't work out. But it really taught, you know, Ed stuck with me, and Ed was actually my bass player up until a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were great, but yeah, that was
it's no, trust.
Not my brightest moment.
But it's trust, you know, you trust in your community, you know, like I played Floyd Fest. I know where Floyd, Virginia is and Roanoke and stuff. And, you know, the yeah. community is, it's small, but I feel like, you know, it's too small for you to be kidnapped in a basement. Off
possibly. I mean, like Roanoke down there, I'm like, I'm just glad I didn't go by myself.
Right.
But, you know, I could have invited a guy from my class or something instead of just two small females to go with me. Not anything against them, but I'm just like, there were all these big dudes in there.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
like,
that's scary.
You know, they could have, you know, I would kick my sister's butts if they ever did anything yeah. like that.
Well, you had to learn trial and error. You had to learn.
Trial and error. But, I, you know, this is, at least this is not like a true crime podcast. And you're like talking to my mom right yeah. now. Like, I am here to tell this story yeah. about myself.
Well, thank God. And I can't wait to hear years and years of your stories. Morgan, thanks so much for being on the show. It really means a lot. I know you're busy. You're kicking ass out there. No pressure on this record. You're going to fuck shit up. I'm going to pump you up right now.
Yeah.
No pressure. You're going to fuck shit
no
up.
No pressure.
You don't need to worry about singles. You don't need to worry about hits because you already a star. Let the songs be the control of this destiny. So fucking do it up. I got one last question. I'll let you go. When it's all said and done, what do you want to be remembered by, Morgan Wade?
You know, I just, and I think about that a lot, is like, what kind of, if I died right now, like, what kind of legacy would I leave? You know, everybody leaves a legacy, whether it's a good one or a bad one. But, you know, I just, I hope that people, no matter how many mistakes I make and how many people that I've hurt, I hope that everyone can see that I grew and I tried to be as authentic as possible. And as long as I can help a couple people along the way to make them better, like that's what I hope I'm remembered by the most, you know, just trying to be authentic.
Well, I just met you for 56 minutes and I could feel it. So keep staying true, keep staying genuine, and tell anyone to not fuck with you because you a bad motherfucker, okay?
Thank you so much, man. No, that seriously, this has been great.
I got you back. Morgan, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah.
Have a great night.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man. You too.
Later.
Bye.
You tuned in to the World Cycle Podcast with Andy Fresco. Thank you for listening to this episode. Produced by Andy Fresco, Joe Angelou, and Chris Lawrence. We need you to help us save the world and spread the word. Please subscribe, rate the show, give us those crazy stars. iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're picking this shit up. Follow us on Instagram at World Saving Podcast for more info and updates. Fresco's blogs and tour dates you find at andyfresco.com. And check our socials to see what's up next. Might be a video dance party, a showcase concert, that crazy shit show, or whatever springs to Andy's wicked brain. And after a year of keeping clean and playing safe, the band is back on tour. We thank our brand new talent booker, Mara Davis. We thank this week's guest, our co-host, and all the fringy frenzies that help make this show great. Thank you all. And thank you for listening. Be your best, be safe, and we will be back next week.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast. As far as we know, any similarity to actual knowledge, facts, or fake is purely coincidental.